find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to the Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance personal development. Today's guest, my goodness, he is a powerhouse entrepreneur, multi-unit franchise owner across multiple states and multiple brands. He is a talented matchmaker and the founder of Eye on Franchising, Lance Grolick. Welcome to the show.
Mr. Nick, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Right on. Let's do this. Yeah, was certainly excited to have you on today. Talk about somebody in franchising that exudes love for franchising. I certainly love your content. And the more I kind of dug in and learned about you, the more I realized that you're just a good old entrepreneur. I certainly respect that. But Lance, nobody raises their hand and says, I'm getting into franchising. More times than not, people think of McDonald's or fast food. They don't even realize something like a painting company could be franchised. But as I always say, I had a mentor. He said, as long as it's legal, moral, makes money, it can be franchised. And my gosh. So, you know, I know you certainly, maybe you did raise your hand and intentionally choose franchising, but more times than not, it has a way of finding you. So Lance, I'm curious, what's your story? How did franchising find you?
Yeah, Nick, you're right. Franchising found me. I was working on Wall Street for Dad, had my economics degree, was being groomed to, do my Wall Street gig with the family business. And I was kind of bored. It wasn't exciting. I didn't want to sit at a desk. I did have restaurant experience. And I had a crazy uncle call me, a really crazy, successful uncle, made money in tech before anybody else did. And he called me. He said, I heard you're bored. This was 1989. He said, come join me in Arizona. I want to build a billion-dollar restaurant company. Now, he said billion, the B word, in 1989. And I said, sure, let's do it. And we got up to about $225 million within about 5.5 years. And after that, I went along my merry way to do my own things. He had gone back to Asia to go build another tech company. And I consulted, which is what you do when you have knowledge and no real job. And eventually landed with Krispy Kreme as a franchisee and a partner in that two-state franchise, eventually Wingstop, and we can kind of peel that back how you wish. But the idea is franchising found me because my uncle was doing a whole bunch of TGI Fridays restaurants in the old days when Fridays was still great. Clearly, it's not what it used to be. Neither is Applebee's, neither is Chili's. Fast casual business has kind of interrupted that whole space where casual dining used to be. And so that's a whole other story, maybe for another podcast.
Right. No kidding. It's funny how franchising is such an incredible growth engine. And you talk about the restaurant space and what was TGI and now, and just how franchising transformed that industry in what was just about a blink of an eye. But my gosh, you had all these diners and mom and pa's, and the customer wins when they get a great product. And that's what franchising does by combining all these skills and talents across an ownership group that is committed to serving a customer and improving that experience in the market. That is why franchising is such a powerful tool. But Lance, my gosh, I had no idea. Well, that's one of the reasons, I should say, one of many. But I had no idea that you worked on Wall Street and grew a company, a family company, to just about $250 million in revenue. That is certainly inspiring.
In 1989 dollars, Nick, that's probably well over $400 million today.
And that was in the tech space.
No, well, that was the uncle. The uncle had the tech business, but I'm just saying in the TGI Fridays business that we had, $225 million today is probably close to $400 million in today's dollars. You know, so it was pretty incredible to see that happen and have a part in it. We did a lot of acquisitions, a lot of new store development as well, started expanding to multiple states. So I'd like to say I got my MBA in restaurant franchise 101, or 301, if you will. It was a blast.
No kidding. What a ride. I think I missed that piece there, Lance. So you helped found your family, helped found and grow TGI Fridays.
That franchise. We were the largest franchisee of TGI Fridays.
Yeah. Talk about an industry just transformed by franchising. And your family was right in the middle of that. So neat.
Yeah. It was great. Franchising is the perfect business for anybody that's a first-time business owner, but it's also a great industry for successful business owners that want the easy route. Franchising is all about the accelerated path. You want to skip some steps in suffering and developing a business model, you join a franchise. My favorite example recently, a gentleman I was talking to, that he told me it took him 8 years to give birth to this independent air conditioning company he created. It took him 8 years to get to 800,000 or so in revenue. He was very proud. He was making great money. Doesn't pay anybody royalties, never paid a franchise fee, figured it out on his own with no experience. He said, why would I have joined a franchise? So, well, because my favorite air conditioning franchise, you would have done 800,000 to 1.5 million in year one, and you would have paid a $43,000 franchise fee and 6% royalties. Who cares? And he looked at me, and it was a total mic drop moment. And all of a sudden the light bulb went on and he realized. But there are so many people out there today, Nick, 75% of America, depending on what survey you listen to, want to be their own boss. The truth is, a very small percentage of those people will ever even act on it. And then a percentage that are going to act on it are listening to all these gurus on the internet talking about just find an existing independent business. Just do that. A lot of people are anti-franchise. Well, they don't know. Some of them are not that bright. Some of them are very bright, but they think being an independent business owner is the only path and the best path, and it's just not true.
No kidding. What do you think a successful franchise owner, just throughout your career, what do you think that, what are the traits that make a successful franchise owner?
So, great question. If you are working by yourself, then it's focus, discipline, following the plan, trusting the process, and being the best student of business that you possibly can be. Now, there are plenty of business owners. So let's use the example of someone working on their own without a team. There are people that try to reinvent the wheel. There are people that are lazy, that maybe they were lazy as employees as well. And they choose not to get out of bed and work hard and focus on their business. There's a certain discipline to being your own boss. Now, if you have employees, nobody ever built an empire by themselves. So my suggestion is you add employees and you build your own empire and you train employees. I talk to a lot of people that are scared to death of having employees because apparently everybody thinks nobody wants to work anymore. That's all bullshit. The reality is, there are plenty of great employees out there. The question is, you have to start with number one, Nick, the mirror test. Look in the mirror, look at yourself and see, are you the person that people should work for? The answer is, a lot of people, even when I started, I was not a good boss. I actually was told by some folks at TGI Fridays back in the late 80s when I was a hotshot out of college, thought I knew everything. And I was told, you're a real a-hole. We don't really want to work for you. You might be smart, but you don't support us. You don't listen to us. And you don't seem to care about us. And that was a wake-up call. And the reality is, I got smart real quick. I listened, I paid attention, and I got better. And that's the reality of what separates great franchise owners from bad franchise owners. Can you build a team? I learned to build a team. When I was at Wingstop, when I was at Krispy Kreme, it was a top 1% franchisee. Why? Because I learned. You hear all about failures and learning from mistakes. I did. I made all those mistakes, got rid of those, and I moved on, and I learned and learned. So the reality is, if you're a great leader, if you're a great manager, even if you're not in the beginning, if you pay attention and you learn and you read and you get mentors, and that's the beauty of franchising. So you're going to get trained and mentored by folks at corporate Lime as an example. However, some of your best mentorship could actually come from collaborating with franchisees in the same system that you're in, what I call the mastermind effect. People join Tony Robbins' mastermind, and you're working with people from all backgrounds, all different industries, not even in the same business as you. But there's some nuggets you'll probably learn from that. It's kind of like a ladder approach where somebody's going to pull you up that rung of the ladder. That's what franchising is. You want to work with that franchisee that's doing $5 million, $10 million a year and listen to everything he or she might have to say so you get to understand, how do I get to that level? So franchising, consider, look in the mirror, start with that. Anybody can do it. Doesn't matter, college degree or not. You just have to fill in your deficits. Surround yourself with people that know more than you about a lot of things you don't know about, which is why if you join an air conditioning franchise, for example, you don't need to know anything about it. But you better be supportive of your team and learn the metrics and key performance indicators to understand what it's like to run a good business in the world of HVAC in this example.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned a lot of things there that I just appreciate. You know, the core of it is executing and following that process and building a team of folks to execute on that process while leaning into masterminds and the training and support that is provided from the professionals to help you to get off to the races as a franchise partner. You know, I love all of those simple ways of talking about being a successful franchise owner, but you mentioned something early on, and it was along the lines of lessons learned. And it just made me curious, Lance, what were some of those lessons that stand out to you that didn't allow you to be a top performing franchise partner? Or maybe it held you back or slowed you down. What were some of those traits that didn't allow you to be a top performing franchise partner?
Yeah, and a lot of business ownership and leadership is, again, all about the team. And when you're charging up a hill, so to speak, like in war, in the military, you want to make sure your troops are behind you. And if you're not a good leader, you're going to come across a hill and realize nobody's following you. You need a team. You need those troops. And the reality is, I mentioned a story earlier where I wasn't that supportive guy, but I'm very competitive. It's just my nature, my family's nature. Both of my grandfathers were entrepreneurs, my father. So I had no chance to be employed in life for a long period of time because I was going to be an entrepreneur like the family. And the reality is when you make mistakes, if you're smart, you adapt or you die. So I learned quickly, as in that example I gave you earlier, there was a employee named Karen who was very well respected. And she was one of the first people to pull me aside and say, you're just not treating the staff, the team, the way they need to be treated. And that's why you're not getting the response that you need. And that was one of my first major life lessons in leadership, that you have to respect the team. You have to show mutual respect and you have to listen. You have to be approachable. And once you, I kind of feel like all of this, Nick, is one giant checklist. And if nobody ever told you this, I mean, I read this stuff in books way back when, but hadn't experienced it in life, because clearly, culturally speaking, I was from New York. I mean, I ran a valet parking company when I was back in New York before I ever got on a plane and went to Arizona. Arizona is a different environment than New York. You treat people differently. Well, you talk to people differently. There are certain expectations. I'm a fast talker because I'm from New York. Not because I have low integrity, but there are perceptions to the, you know, the contrary when you're talking to New Yorkers. I even had to change my accent so I could, you know, let's just say have more comfortable conversations with people so they didn't think I was some crazy New Yorker. But the reality is it's all up to you. There are ways for you to be a top performer, but you are going to make mistakes and it's okay. The quicker you make mistakes, the quicker you're going to get to the better result that you need. Make sense?
Absolutely. Business is the ultimate personal development course. It's always revealing to you where you need to level up. And people are at the core of that. And so how you lead them is critical. And that's generally where a lot of folks start. And that's why franchising is an awesome way to get started in business. As you mentioned earlier, you can learn how to build and scale teams and grow as a team builder in a professional setting. That is the core of being a business owner, and it requires so much humility. And you know, you talked about growing a founding location for nearly a decade. You know, I could definitely relate to that. I spent I took so much pride in not taking a Saturday off in my 20s. I don't even think I really went on a vacation. If I did, it might have been no longer than a few days. And I certainly had to learn how to lead folks and interact with folks. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about that season for me personally. Because once I got into my 30s, not that I'm too far in, but that lone wolf approach, as we started scaling nationally, I had to personally start working with a heck of a lot more people. And those were some humbling growing pains, most certainly. And it didn't just happen in my initial endeavor. I started my first painting career in 2008, so nearly two decades now. But there certainly are all of these seasons of leveling up. And just when you think you're great at leading folks, every time you maybe go from being a single brand owner to a multi-brand to a single state to a multi-state, you get stretched. And even though you may have leveled up and developed that team building and leadership skill set, well, to get to the next level, you're reintroduced with some of those areas where business just loves to show you where you need to level up. And eventually, much like anything else, you do something long enough, it builds a confidence, and that is entrepreneurship. Keeping promises to yourself while going through growing pains and leading people certainly is a big part of that. So speaking of leading people and franchise empires, a lot of folks want to get into business because of the generational wealth that it creates. Beyond all the other things, like the independence and the freedom and owning an asset and you name it, there's so many areas. You can talk legacy, but when you're talking generational wealth, how do you think they approach that from a franchise investment standpoint, short term and long term?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I want to comment on something you said a little while ago. You know, business, when you own a business, like in sports, I love sports. I was good at sports and I'm very competitive. I mentioned that. I've always been competitive. And when you own a business, you also have a scoreboard. That the scoreboard is all about your revenue. It's all about your profitability. It's your turnover of your people. And those are great metrics to look at on a regular basis. I think when people are looking to get into their first business, franchising is filled with tons of people getting into their first business. I don't necessarily think generational wealth, while it is on the list of things that people consider, I think people are always looking to get out of something. They don't like their boss. They hate their schedule. Maybe they travel too much. They haven't received a bonus or a raise in quite a long time. And they feel like they're wasting their time. They're not getting to see their kids play sports on a regular basis or the dance recital or violin recital, whatever it might be. It's this lack of control that the average person in America has being an employee. So the first part of this dream that we can make reality in franchising is that people have an opportunity to do better than they're currently doing. More money, more flexibility, more control, and build a better future for the family. You know, a lot of people talk about freedom. There's time freedom and there's money freedom. And that's the ultimate in business ownership, when you're good and you'll learn to be good. So generational wealth is something as we go. Like, there's a lot of people out there, Nick, that are talking about being a billionaire. I have a friend on the internet that's always wearing a shirt, you know, billionaire in training. Billionaire. Like, if you had 50 million, that's not enough. I mean, come on, give me a break, you know? So the reality is I focus on, with my clientele, just do better than you're doing now. You make $200,000 a year, let's get you making $300,000 a year. Then your business is going to be worth a multiple of that cash flow. And if your goals are quite lofty, add another business. I have many, many friends, Nick, that own multiple franchise brands in multiple states. They've been doing it 25 years. As you know, franchising is very contagious. You know, once you get in and you see the success and how easy it can be, nothing's ever easy. The 400-pound guy that wants to get back in the gym finally to get to 200 pounds again, is that easy to do? Of course not. Why? There's work. You have to get uncomfortable in the first place. And it's the same thing in business ownership. So that's my take.
Right. Yeah, executing on the model and being present and satisfied with the journey and the process, and that you have to start somewhere.
Absolutely. Everybody's got to start somewhere. And there's a lot of people that are uneasy and nervous about where they start. But again, it's an uncomfortable feeling. And most people I work with are shocked that they end up selecting a brand that they know nothing about. They didn't really expect it. I would imagine most people that have joined Lime as a franchisee realize, I never thought I'd be an owner of a painting franchise.
No kidding.
Fill in the blank. It doesn't have to be painting franchise. It could be home care, senior home care franchise, or restaurant franchise. I didn't really think that's what I wanted, but it's an amazing process when we start working with people and start to understand, hey, you have skills. Your skills are transferable. Well, what does that mean? You could do a lot of things. My favorite story is my friend that was bald and did not know how to cut hair, but he ended up owning 19 Great Clips hair salons. His initial reaction to Great Clips was, that was silly. Why would I be shown Great Clips as an example? I can't even be a customer. I have no hair. But it fit him. It fit his budget. It fit his skills. It was something he ended up liking. It was fun. But you don't necessarily know until you go through the process.
And so that's clearly an important part of growing generational wealth through franchising, finding a place that you can call home.
Absolutely. Yep. And some people's homes are a big company, big brand like Great Clips with thousands of locations. But in most cases, it's not the case. There are people that are jumping into Lime or Voda when it was brand new, or Rolling Suds or That One Painter. All of these brands that, you know, you got to start somewhere. I got into Great Clips. I got into Wingstop when there was only 60 locations. At Krispy Kreme, we were the second franchisees. The brand had been around 50 years, and we were the second franchisees, and wasn't exactly set up for franchising. They weren't really sure what they were doing. They knew how to make a donut, but that was about it. There really wasn't a business around it that was appropriate.
No kidding. And so being involved with a brand early on and really throughout its entire history, as a franchise partner, it's important to be a part of the innovation and the direction of the brand. That's the power of a franchise, the entire system working collaboratively in a structured approach so that they can level up the customer experience. That grows enterprise value. That's the power of a franchise model, going wide, going deep. And that is how you become the number one provider in your sector. I know that's certainly at the core of what we focus on at Lime. And generally, healthy collaboration within a franchise organization, it's done through a franchise advisory council. You've been involved as a franchise partner with so many brands. Can you talk about that from a franchise relations standpoint and the power of a franchise advisory council?
Such a great question. And I don't get this asked a lot, so I'm glad you're asking it. When there's a franchise advisory council, it's pretty darn powerful. I was elected to the franchise advisory council by my peers, and then I was immediately voted president and held that almost the entire time I was a franchisee. And in the early days of Wingstop, there were some things that certainly were correct, but there was, you know, wing prices were through the roof. Every time chicken prices moved a nickel a pound, that was $5,000 a month that I lost. Pretty insane, right? Imagine paint moved $3 a gallon, what you would lose every month, or, you know, the equivalent. I lost $5,000 sucked out of my bank account just because chicken prices went up a nickel a pound. So we needed to add other products, but not just adding for the sake of adding. It had to fit the core. So the advisory council, in my case, we helped to really guide Wingstop to what it became. I remember years later, somebody contacted me about the newer CEO of Wingstop, who was getting all these accolades. I'm like, it's amazing. We changed the course of Wingstop many, many years before. Started having $1 million locations, $1.5 million units, $2 million a year we would do at some locations as small as 1,400 square feet. And we knew we got to see what Wingstop would become by giving the customers what they would want, but also giving franchisees an opportunity to make, you know, great money. And volume cures everything in the business world. You know, the more volume, you know, more people you can get through the door. And today's day and age, it's all about the internet. You know, it's unfortunately about third-party delivery in the restaurant space. Thankfully, in painting, you don't deal with that. But nevertheless, the advisory council is an incredibly valuable piece. You do need to have a decent size franchise. I mean, even if you had 10 franchisees, all 10 of those franchisees can be considered the council until such point you get bigger and trim it down to maybe 5. And it's always a good thing to take into consideration the regional or geographic layout of the country, you know, whether it's the West Coast, the East Coast. For example, California is just a difficult climate to do business. That's just the nature of the beast. You might want to have somebody on the council representing the state of California and all its franchisees to hear from their perspective. So I think it's absolutely a great idea. For those listening that aren't aware, it was franchisees at McDonald's that created the Filet-O-Fish, the Big Mac created by franchisees, because on the Filet-O-Fish side of things, a franchisee, I think it was in the Midwest, said on the many, many years ago, hey, we need a fish on Fridays. I spent a lot of time in the Midwest with the Brewpub brand that I own a piece of, and I heard it from them on a regular basis. In Wisconsin, you need to have fish on Fridays on your pub or bar or restaurant menus. So the Filet-O-Fish became a hit, suggested by a franchisee, and it became an everyday menu item. So collaboration is the key to success in franchising for sure.
Yeah, you're getting that in the field, in the market, direct feedback in terms of what needs to be leveled up in the business.
Yeah, and these are partners. Franchise partners is typically a terminology a lot of people, a lot of brands are using, because we have skin in the game. We own a piece of this, or all of our market, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, you know, some best practices with an FAC, you know, the anonymous voting is key, right? Being voted on by the peers. You know, we did a hybrid. Half of our council was picked, or no, actually everybody was voted on, but we picked some home office representation, 2 people, and then everybody voted for 4 representatives, 1 from each time zone. So we just kind of kept it simple. And that's how we did it. I always love sharing tips to help folks level up. That's what is beautiful about the franchise space. At Lime, we don't have any competition. We are the only luxury painting brand nationally. And so when we're working to level up our brand with our partners, we're working to be the number one provider in our market. And that is done through collaboration, healthy collaboration, right? And having that representation with home office, our franchise owners love it. They can go to their representatives and talk to them and get that feedback loop, or just talk directly to anybody, of course. But I just wanted to point that out, Lance. I know that's an area that you've been honored to serve as president and voted by your peers. So let's go. That is so awesome. Again, Lance, just you're dropping so much fire. I tell you, I was excited to have you on the show. Thank you for helping me level up. And I know our audience is as well. So with that being said, Lance, what are some red flags if I'm reviewing an FDD? What are some things that I should be aware of when doing my due diligence as I'm finding the right home for me?
Yeah, great question. Item 19, the earnings claim, used to be called financial representations. Very important. If a brand is not showing anything in the item 19, it might mean that their numbers suck or they're embarrassed, whatever it might be. So if there's, if the item 19 doesn't show good numbers or nothing, that is a problem, potentially. Item 20, the growth or retraction. You know, there, it is fairly normal in big brands to start having a 5% retraction where people might not be successful. They have to close locations. It does happen. I mean, let the viewers need to understand, or the listeners need to understand, that in all business, there are failures. But I'd like to say that in great brands, the failures generally happen because the brand generally selected the wrong franchisee. It's just going to happen. Just like in any great company, there are great employees and there are shitty employees. Just the nature of the beast. They're not all great employees. They're not all great franchisees. But the biggest red flag and the way you're going to look for it is when you have an opportunity in the validation stage to talk to existing franchisees about their experience. I tell all of my clientele, and my services are free, I get paid by the brands. I tell my clientele, talk to at least 5 franchisees and ask them about their experience. And ask questions like, would you do this over again? Is the marketing great? Are you making money? Is it meeting your expectations? What was the hardest part? There's a whole host of questions that I could send to you to make sure that you're asking the right questions of franchisees. The franchisees are the best way. Imagine if you're getting married. What's the best way to know if you have the right future spouse? You talk to her friends or his friends, whatever, and the family, and you get to understand who you're marrying. I saw the red flags with my first wife, but I made a mistake and got married anyway. I got married again, though, Nick, many, many years ago, and found the perfect wife. Relationships, whether it's in business or personal, are difficult. But when you pick the right people to spend time with and do business with, it could be a dream. It could be the best thing you ever did in your life. So it isn't difficult to pick up on the red flags, but what happens is people start to get emotionally attached to something and ignore those red flags. People fail in franchises simply because they picked the wrong franchise. They missed the red flags. They didn't see things that they should have seen. I had a young guy recently that came to me all excited about a particular brand. There's nothing wrong with the brand that he wanted or he thought he wanted. The issue was the brand was brand new, experienced leadership, but brand new brand. He literally had one franchisee to talk to. That was it. And that franchisee was so new, he didn't have anything to say that was constructive yet. He had no constructive feedback. So I said, you're a young guy. I want to set you up for success. Let's get yourself into a more mature brand where there is support and there's franchisees for you to learn from. It's not just you jumping into a brand. I don't see the value of you jumping into a brand that's just too new. So that's just some of my advice.
Right. And in all of your years in franchising, Lance, specifically from the lens of a franchise partner, what is it that you look for in an opportunity that you would invest in?
Yeah. Well, it always starts with great leadership. What does this brand, when I joined Wingstop, the new ownership group, were all a bunch of gray-haired guys that had a ton of experience in the chicken space specifically, in the restaurant business. That impressed me. Although Wingstop at the time, their item 19 and their numbers were garbage. So when I looked at that item 19, you know, 22 years ago, it showed 600,000 average unit volume and food cost or cost of goods sold that was through the roof and terrible. But I like the story. There's always a story. So in this case, I like the gray-haired, experienced leadership team. I like the uniqueness of the niche. And nobody else was in that niche specifically. It wasn't like a Buffalo Wild Wings, which was five times the cost, and it was a big bar concept, and the food quality wasn't as good as Wingstop. So I did the research. I talked to franchisees. There weren't that many super successful franchisees in those days, so I understood that. So there is a process that I take my clients through, and it's really all about the franchise fit. And that fit starts with budget. It goes to your skills. It goes to your goals and objectives. It goes to, you know, everything, your lifestyle and everything we've already talked about so far. How hard do you want to work? Turns out the restaurant business is the hardest place to be. So I don't recommend it a lot for a lot of people. But, you know, if you're a high net worth person and you have money to throw around, the restaurant space can be really good. However, there's more ways to lose money than make money in the restaurant business. There's just too many variables. So Lime is a great example. The home service space is fantastic. I consider that easy compared to everything else I've done. Less moving parts. And so franchising is still the best bet. Now, funny story, Nick. I had a guy ask me, what's the failure rate in franchising? So, well, what I will tell you is the failure rate of my favorite brands, if you consider the failure rate of independent businesses, there are some stats out there that 90% of independent businesses fail within 5 years. Well, in franchising, I did a little sort of personal anecdotal statistical kind of research-based project on my 20 favorite brands. And of those 20 favorite brands, the failure rate is anywhere from 5 to 8%. That's it. That's it. That's all it is. 5 to 8% failure rate, or you can flip it around and say, you know, up to a 92% success rate, but much higher than that potentially. And the people that fail in those great brands, it's because they weren't right. There's a lot of people, Nick, and you know this. You might even have a franchisee like this. When people are getting interviewed for a job or even for a franchise, they talk and talk and talk, and some of what they say is not true. They just want to get the opportunity. They want to get the franchise, or they want to get the job. And then when they get in, they realize, yeah, this isn't for me. This is not what I thought. It's too hard of too much work, whatever it might be. So at the end of the day, again, I said it earlier, franchising or business ownership just isn't for everybody.
Right. No kidding. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about you joining Wingstop and being elected by your peers and helping them to add more value for the customer and that being your home. But there were some red flags up front. As much as there was an opportunity, there were also red flags. And so why did you still move forward? And you not only moved forward, you went to the other side, you became a partner, but you became an instrumental part of collaborating with the direction of the brand.
Yeah.
Which led to higher average volumes, folks doing things they'd never done before, thinking differently. Such a fun period, but I just wanted to make that distinction. That wasn't done yet. There were some red flags, as you mentioned, and you still move forward.
People know today the riches are in the niches. People want to get into a niche that works. So I knew the niche was fantastic. I knew the history and the story was not as good as it should be because of maybe franchisees that they should not have selected. I did do validation and speak to a bunch of unhappy franchisees at Wingstop. And I realized within a short period of time of speaking with them that they weren't good franchisees to begin with while they bellyached about the company. But that's up to you. Not everybody can sort of discern between a bad franchisee and a bad company. I'd learned enough to know what I was listening to at that time. The reality is, again, there was a great leadership team. Now, I speak to people all the time in my capacity as a franchise broker that say to me, well, I just want to look, show me the 10 best brands with the best item 19. So yeah, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. It's not all about the numbers. And that's when I give my example of Wingstop. And, you know, there are great companies like Citywide Facility Solutions has one of the best item 19s I've ever seen. Top 25% of franchisees are doing like $15 million a year on a $300,000 investment. But it's not right for everybody, and they're not going to accept everybody. If you don't have B2B sales experience, you will never get even in that brand. And that's another misnomer. A lot of people think that they can just join any brand they want. Maybe there are some franchise brands that will just take your money, even if you're not right. Citywide's been around since 1961. They're not going to take your money unless you fit everything and check off every box. And that still doesn't guarantee that all 100% of their franchisees are successful. They're probably still going to have a few on the bottom. If you're going to rank them best to worst, still a couple on the bottom. So the reality is I get to know my clientele and really what makes them tick. Because at the end of the day, Nick, it's not about, I mean, yeah, everybody wants to make more money than ever and build generational wealth. But there's a lot of brands you can make money. There's a lot of brands you can make money. It could be a mosquito repellent brand that you can start with one, buy more, get a resale of a good franchise territory near you. There's a lot of ways to build cash flow and build wealth. So the distinction is, what is really best for you? And I always tell people, the more brands that I introduce you to and the more conversations you have with people, the more comfortable you're going to get. It's like working out. We could talk about getting in shape and doing certain exercises. Until you're doing it on a regular basis and getting that flow, you have no idea how it really feels.
Right. And everybody's interpretation or lens is different, and what their skills are made up of are different, and frankly their definition of generational wealth and legacy and freedom and lifestyle, and you know, you can go down the list, and so that's why you and your experience in franchising and entrepreneurship, I just love it, because that is what makes you a special matchmaker. As I mentioned, I was very excited to have you on the show today and to help me and viewers to level up. But I have one final question for you, Lance. Drum roll. Why do you love franchising so much?
I love it because it still seems to be an unknown to so many people. There are people that really don't know anything about franchising. And they think there's so many other things to look at in business ownership. Franchising should be your first stop when it comes to business ownership. I did it multiple times. I've helped multiple friends do it, family members, fraternity brothers, and countless clients. You know, my goal today, Nick, it's so funny. I tell everybody this. I want you to get into the best franchise for you and your family. And you know why? It's because I want you to refer people for the rest of my life. I want you to send me people. And I have my clientele that are happy, successful people in franchising send me so many referrals. It's absolutely incredible and rewarding, and I love it. And I've helped multiple families get into their second and third franchise already doing this forever. But I love it because I am a disruptor. I am a franchise influencer. I love telling anybody, whether they want to listen or not, that they need to consider a franchise, and educating them, giving them the right information to make the best decision for themselves and their family. So that's it.
Well said. And thank you for your service. Thank you for your lifelong commitment to franchising. You're certainly changing lives and providing folks the American dream. I too am on this journey, and absolutely love franchising. And so I admire your style, Lance. Eye on Franchising, check it out. I certainly enjoyed having you on the show. Thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me, Nick. I appreciate it.
And if you have enjoyed this episode, hit the subscribe. It's how we are able to continue to grow and bring thought leaders on like Lance. Drop a comment. Let us know what you thought of this conversation. And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit linepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.